We present The Third Degree, coming this week from the University of York.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Steve Punt. Welcome to The Third Degree, the quiz which is a students versus lecturers competition. Each of the students is studying one of the three subjects taught by the three dons, so as well as questions on general knowledge, there'll be specialist subject rounds as well. This week, we're coming from the University of York, which was founded in 1963 as a classic plate glass university, and if you get a degree from here, you use the term ebor, which is an abbreviation of the Roman word for the town, and not, as you might think, the name of someone's sword in The Lord of the Rings. Famous alumni span the political divide, including, as they do, former Labour Cabinet Minister Harriet Harman and professional right-wing fulminator and columnist Peter Hitchens. Other alumni include Christine Hamilton, wife of the disgraced Tory MP and UKIP wannabe Neil Hamilton, and comedian Harry Enfield. So well done, York, for giving us a humorous icon whose long-running double act has provided decades of national amusement, and Harry Enfield's very funny too. So let's meet the teams first from the students.
Hi, I'm Dan Brooks and I'm studying History of Art.
So why? Why did you choose History of Art?
So I originally applied to do Computing and Maths and my UKIP application went wrong. So
I'm very impressed that you applied to Computing and Maths and switched to History of Art. We have a polymath on our hands. So let's see who's facing you on the subject of art history.
I'm Dr. Emma Wells. I'm an associate lecturer in history.
With a bit of art thrown in.
Architectural history, art history.
Splendid. So, next up for the students.
Hi, I'm Sophia Steinsberg and I'm a first-year theatre student.
And when you get to the third year, and indeed move on, what do you want to do? How do you see yourself doing?
I think I'd like to end up doing something to do with presenting and public speaking.
Presenting? OK, I'll be careful. As it were.
Yeah, I work with a charity called Click Sergeant. I've done quite a lot of public speaking with them, so it's something I really enjoy.
Splendid. Good. So let's see who's facing you on the Don side.
I'm Simon Vanderborg, and I'm lecturer in screenwriting in TFTV.
And finally, for the students.
Hi, I'm Nick Meadowcroft-Lunn, and I'm studying physics and philosophy.
Physics and philosophy, that's an interesting combination.
Well, they gave me a choice of doing physics or philosophy at many universities, and I decided, well, I can't really choose, so I'll do both. And now I'm here.
That's very good. I can't choose, so I'll do both. Let's see who's facing you on physics.
Hello, I'm David Jenkins, and I'm a professor of physics.
That's exactly what we were looking for, professor of physics. So that is our teams for this week. And our first round is a general knowledge round. You work in teams, 2 points for correct answer, 1 point for a bonus, no points for claiming the question breaches your safe space and can thus be no platformed from the programme. We will start with the Dons. Which traditional fairy tale was adapted into a 1946 film directed by Jean Cocteau?
Beauty and the Beast.
Absolutely right. Yes, indeed. La Belle et la Bête, often described as one of the supreme cinematic examples of metaphor and imagery. You can easily tell it apart from the Disney cartoon remake because few Frenchmen would ever say, be our guest. Over to the students. Over to the students. What perennial herbaceous plant, which contains hallucinogenic alkaloids, is the subject of many superstitions, including supposedly letting out a man's scream if uprooted from the soil?
Is it cannabis?
I suppose if you smoked enough of it. It isn't, though, although that's a top student answer, I have to say. I can offer that as a bonus.
We're saying mandrake.
Yes, it is the mandrake. Mandrakes feature heavily in Harry Potter books, but I would like to point out that this superstition was genuine twaddle before it became Harry Potter twaddle. So, Dons, what is the connection, and I'll need a fairly precise answer here, between a two-wheeled form of powered transport, a type of American inn, and a form of music pioneered by, amongst others, Berry Gordy?
Mo something, aren't they? Motel.
Yeah. They all start with Mo. Moped,
yep.
Motel... Motown.
Is quite correct. All portmanteau words using the word motor. That is right. And for the students, although there have been various different descriptions of the Stations of the Cross over the years, the number of them has remained unchanged. So how many are there?
I think there are two. That's probably very wrong.
There are more than two, okay. I'm afraid. How many Stations of the Cross are there?
I should know this.
12.
12 is a lot closer. It is actually 14.
14.
Now, Dons, your question. What is the name of the former naval base off the northeast coast of Scotland where the German Imperial Fleet was scuttled at the end of the First World War?
Scupper Flow.
Scupper Flow is quite right. Large body of water in the Orkneys. The Germans sank their fleet there to avoid it falling into British hands. Having spent weeks carefully dropping keys and spanners overboard and welding hatches open so they couldn't be stopped, you see, even when they're scuttling their own navy, the Germans do it in a really efficient way. Anyway, students, in February 2016, a website that enabled old school and college alumni to get back in touch finally closed, having been at its height one of the leading social media websites in the UK. What was it called?
Friends Reunited?
Yes, that's right. Every school in the country pretty much got involved. There was even a website called Eton Friends Reunited, or thecabinet.com for sure. Final question for the Dons. Which American athlete from Oakville, Alabama, won four track and field gold medals in the 1936 Berlin Olympics?
Jesse Owens.
Yes. He won the 100 metres, 200 metres long jump and was in the 4x100 metre relay. Finally, in this round for the students, the number 1 plus the square root of 5 all over 2, or approximately 1.618, has the property of equaling its own reciprocal when you subtract 1, often represented by mathematicians as phi. What is it also more commonly called?
The golden number?
Have another go, because that's very close. There are three possibilities. All starting the golden.
The golden ratio.
The golden ratio, yes, indeed. Yeah. Or the golden mean or the golden section, which makes an appearance in Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code, in which one character explains to another that the proportion of unbelievable dialogue to unbelievable action should be exactly 1 to 1.618. So, at the end of that round, quite a high-scoring round there. The students have 4, the Dons are ahead on 9. And it's time for our first specialist subject round, where our first matching pair, Dan Brooks for the students and Emma Wells for the Dons, go head-to-head on the subject of history of art. Just to remind you of the rules, if the Don can't answer their question, it goes over to the student for a bonus. If the student can't answer, there is no bonus for the Don. It's as lopsided as one of Picasso's Demoiselles d'Avignon on a wonky easel on a slopey floor. OK, let's go with the Don's first question. Emma, the Ghent altarpiece in St. Bavo's Cathedral, also called the Adoration of the Mystic Lamb, is considered to be one of the finest examples of a polyptych panel style altarpiece, but who is it by?
It's not Tintoretto, is it?
I like the way you put that in the negative. It's not Tintoretto. No, it isn't. That means I can offer it as a bonus.
I don't want to make a really stupid guess, so I'm just going to let that one then.
Do you want to guess? You don't have to guess.
No, I'm going to refrain.
It's Hubert and Jan van Eyck. Hubert designed it and Jan painted it because Hubert had died and was thus unable to paint it, I assume. In next question, William Frederick Yames is probably best known for an 1878 oil-on-canvas Civil War scene where a young child stands alone in front of a group of interrogating government officials. What is the title of this picture?
I have no idea.
It isn't.
No, I recognise the story, but no.
It is called And When Did You Last See Your Father? The painting hangs in the Walker Gallery in Liverpool, despite numerous attempts by the Child Support Agency to buy it for their headquarters. So, that brings us to Dan and your questions on history of art. One of the Belgian painter René Magritte's most iconic works is entitled The Treachery of Images, but actually consists of a single rather prosaic object with a paradoxical sentence underneath. What is the object and what is the sentence?
Is it a pipe? But it's not a pipe. I can't remember the full sentence.
I'm going to give you that because it is. It is a pipe and the words, ceci n'est pas un pipe, or this is not a pipe. So, yes. I'm glad you got that because I don't know the French for ceci n'est pas une question de bonus. Next, which British artist commissioned the Army School of Ammunition to blow up a garden shed and then recreated the debris it made mid-explosion in a work exhibited at the Tate entitled Cold Dark Matter, An Exploded View?
Damien Hirst?
It isn't Damien Hirst. It was Cornelia Parker, this rather extraordinary piece. If you're interested, I would Google Cornelia Parker. I don't advise you to Google garden shed, comma, explosives. Not unless you've always wondered what an MI5 interrogation room looks like. So, at the end of that round, the students have crept up slightly, now on 6, and the Dons have 9. And our next round is a list round, a sort of intellectual beat the clock, where each team in turn has to name as many things as they can in a particular category that I shall give them all within 30 seconds. Every time they get one right, they will be rewarded by a sound very much like this. And if they get 8 right, they'll get an extra point, and I'm sure an awestruck round of applause. So here we go. First, the Dons. Your category is, appropriately for the Great Diocese of York, Church of England principal holy days and principal feasts. The word principal here has a specific meaning to distinguish it from lesser festivals and commemorations. And your time starts now.
Christmas, Advent, Easter, Whitsun.
Good Friday.
Palm Sunday.
Ascension. Maundy Thursday.
Ash Wednesday. Shrove Tuesday. Good Friday.
Epiphany.
We said that.
I'm sorry.
Trinity Sunday.
And thou hast 8. Yes. That was very good. A very impressive collection there. I think you only missed Pentecost. And Shrove Tuesday, yeah, it doesn't count because Pancake Day, bizarrely, isn't technically a feast. Which is a little bit odd. So, let's see if the students can beat that. And your category is the highly age-appropriate David Bowie albums. Now, they have to have been released in the UK and be studio albums as opposed to live or compilations. They must be music, no speech or narration or anything by Tin Machine. And your time starts now.
Hunky Dory, The Man Who Sold the World, Black Star.
Best of Bowie?
That was another guess, wasn't it? You're into this guessing thing. Very confident first three there.
Heroes. I'm struggling now. Really.
Are you mentally rifling through your parents' record collection there?
My own, actually.
That was very good. I would give you a bonus for that, but you did pretty well, actually. You got 4 there. Man Who Sold the World, Hunky Dory, Heroes and Black Star. So, at the end of that round, students now have 10, the Dons have 18. So, that means it's time for another specialist round, where our next pair, Sophia Steinsberg for the students and Simon van der Borg for the Dons, answer questions on theatre, film and television studies. Remember, the student can get a bonus from the Don, but not the other way round. It may be unfair, but hey, Simon, that's Chinatown. Right, here are your questions. In a camera script, what does the abbreviation HAWS, H-A-W-S, signify?
Held as wide shot.
That is so close that I will let you have another go.
High angle wide shots.
Yes. High angle wide shot is quite correct.
Can I just say that we teach the students not to use camera descriptions here?
Well, cinema has a long history. What name is given to the technique whereby a shot is composed with the horizon not parallel with the bottom of the frame, often used to express tension or unease?
A Dutch shot. Dutch angle.
Yes, correct. Dutch tilt or Dutch angle. Famous examples of films that use a lot of tilted angles include The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, The Third Man, The Ipcress File, and any Super 8 film made by an enthusiastic 1970s dad on holiday. And finally, independent filmmakers Working Dog were responsible for 2 internationally successful Australian comedy films, one about a working-class Melbourne family who are forced to leave their home to make way for developers, and the other about a remote satellite relay station in the outback, relaying the Apollo moon landing to the rest of the world. Can you name either of these 2 films?
The Castle and The Dish.
That's both of them, absolutely right. I haven't seen The Castle, but I like The Dish. And the strapline on the poster was Houston's Other Problem, which I thought was very good. So, Sophia, let's have your questions on theatre, film and television studies. If a producer wants to have any music in their stage production, what is the name of the collection and distribution organisation from which they must acquire a licence and indeed pay?
I think I know what I want to say, but I don't think it's right. Is it copyright?
No, they deal with copyright. It is the Performing Rights Society, or PRS, who collect money on behalf of writers and composers. In movie making, what is the title of the technician who creates incidental sound effects in sync with visual components of film, like footsteps or fight sounds?
Sound operator?
It's a Foley artist, named after Jack Donovan Foley, who worked for Universal Studios when sound film first came in. Some of the techniques are very widely known, like this. Coconut halves for horseshoes. Then there's this. A watermelon cut in half for the sound of someone being run through with a sword. Paradoxically, if you want the sound of a watermelon being run through with a sword, you just get it by cutting a sound engineer in half. So, at the end of that round, the Dons have crept slightly further ahead. The students have 10. The Dons now have 24. And the next round is called Highbrow, Lowbrow. We want to know just where the intellectual level of our contestants is pitched. So, if you think The Sorrows of Young Werther is a novel about a boy who's sad because he's lost his favourite toffee, I would go lowbrow. If a student risks going highbrow and gets it right, they'll get 2 points, not one. It's the other way round for the Dons. We'll start with Dan. Your subject is runner, the runner. Now, would you like to go highbrow or lowbrow on the runner?
I'll go lowbrow, please.
Go lowbrow. OK, your lowbrow runner question is this. The Maze Runner by James Dashner is another example of the teenage future dystopia publishing phenomenon and has also been made into a successful film. Can you name any of the other four books in the series?
The Scorch Trials?
The Scorch Trials, absolutely right. The Scorch Trials and the Death Cure, and then the prequels, The Kill Order and The Fever Code. It's unusual to publish two prequels. The only other example in literary history is Thomas Hardy's Near to the Madding Crowd and Do You Know This Madding Crowd is Driving Me Nuts. That leaves Emma with the highbrow runner question, which is this. The Kite Runner, published in 2003, is a novel by the author Khaled Hosseini. Which war forms the backdrop to the first half of the book?
I'm going to guess the First World War.
It isn't, actually, and I can't offer bonuses in this round. It's the Afghanistan War. So, we move on to Sophia. Your hint is Path of Least Resistance. The Path of Least Resistance. Now, would you like to go highbrow or lowbrow?
Lowbrow.
Lowbrow, she said confidently. Ah, now, you won't regret this. Your lowbrow Path of Least Resistance question is this. The Channel 4 winter sports reality show The Jump is now notorious for basically injuring its contestants. Now, on the understanding that everyone took part of their own free will, as our lawyers insist we point out, can you give me the name of any one of the contestants who have been injured on the show?
No.
Really? There's hundreds of them. Just pick a celebrity and they've probably been injured.
Stella McCartney?
Is one of the few that hasn't, I'm afraid. But Stella McCartney is an interesting guess because Heather Mills, who her father was married to briefly, was on The Jump. But I can tell you that amongst the roll call of casualties of the show are Sir Steve Redgrave, Sally Burko, Ben Cohen, Tina Hobley, Linford Christie, Beth Tweddle and Rebecca Adlington. So, yes, a slightly controversial show. Although you'd have to say that picking someone called Tina Hobley was, that was asking for trouble in the first place. That leaves Simon with the highbrow Path of Least Resistance question, which is this. Considered instrumental in Britain granting India independence in 1947, what Sanskrit word was used by Gandhi for his philosophy of non-violent resistance?
Karma.
Satyagraha, it is. From the Sanskrit satya, meaning truth, and agaha, meaning effort or endeavour. We move on to Nick. Your subject is fundamental ripples. Fundamental ripples. Now, do you fancy going highbrow or lowbrow there?
Highbrow.
Highbrow. And you know, you may not regret that, because the highbrow fundamental ripples question is, in early 2016, physicists confirmed that an experiment had for the first time successfully detected gravitational waves, as predicted by the theory of general relativity. What was the name of this experiment?
Oh, it's L something.
Yep, it was.
LIGO, LIGO.
LIGO is correct, yes. A two-pointer there. Very good. LIGO, which stands for Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. That leaves David with the lowbrow fundamental ripples question, which is this. The ripple is a chocolate bar. Now... now made by Galaxy, which was launched in the 1970s and became a rival to what broadly equivalent chocolate bar made by Cadbury's?
I think these questions were the wrong way around.
That's great to see a physicist get a chocolate question, isn't it?
I think I'll say Flake.
Now, you see, you've fallen for it there. It's the Twirl, because... because the flake is not covered, you see. That's the crucial thing. It's covered. I thought we'd be arguing about the gravitational wave. No, it's the chocolate that's really put the cat among the pigeons. So, that was the students, and now the Dons get their first choice. Emma, your phrase is lip trouble. Now, would you like to go highbrow or lowbrow on lip trouble?
Go on, I'll go lowbrow.
Lowbrow, OK. In 2015, one of the ubiquitous Kardashian/Jenner clan launched a new beauty product for the lips that quickly became a must-have item, selling out wherever it was launched. What is its exact name?
It was Kylie Jenner, I know that.
Yes, it was. You're nearly there.
Kylie.
What was it called?
Kylie's lip kit.
Yes!
Oh, my God!
Yes, it was. The Kylie lip kit, a liquid lipstick and lip liner duo, which was an overwhelming success and unobtainable virtually overnight as soon as it launched, which is both an affirmation of the power of celebrity in modern culture and also a sign that the apocalypse may be upon us. That leaves Dan with the highbrow lip trouble question, which is this. Who, speaking about the class system, wrote the lines, "It is impossible for an Englishman to open his mouth without making some other Englishman despise him"?
Thatcher?
I'm sure she probably thought that. no, it's actually Bernard Shaw. It's a line from Pygmalion. Finally, David, your hint is alliterative artists. Now, do we want to go highbrow or lowbrow here?
I'll go highbrow because he did that to me, so...
OK, your highbrow alliterative artist question will involve listening to this. This is some music used for some very scary scenes in Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. Scared. That was part of the third movement of Music for Strings, Percussion and Celesta. But which alliterative composer is it by?
I don't know. Cage. No, I'm just being stupid. Honestly. no idea.
The answer is Béla Bartók. Or actually, it should be Bartók Béla because he was Hungarian and the surname comes first. So that leaves Nick with the lowbrow alliterative artist's question, and that will involve listening to these two pieces of music.
Well, I was born to coal miner's daughter in a cabin on a hill in Butcher Holler.
So, Coal Miner's Daughter there, followed by the 2011 hit I Follow Rivers, both by alliterative artists with first and second names that start with the same letter. What is that letter?
L.
L is right. Yes, very good. Which name did you recognise?
I don't know why this might be wrong, but I thought the second was Leona Lewis, so I was going off that. But that's probably entirely wrong.
Well, actually,
so
that's brilliant because it wasn't, but you still... Nikki Lee, but you still got it right. The other one was Loretta Lynn. So, that was an interesting round, and at the end of it, the Dons still comfortably ahead, but the students now have 14, the Dons have 26. And it's time for another specialist round, where our third pair answer questions on the subject of physics. We'll start with David. In quantum mechanics, if an electron in an atom has a principal quantum number of 3, what are all the possible values for its magnetic quantum number?
Well, you're asking a nuclear physicist, so I'm completely confused now. So is it 7 halves, 5 halves, 3 halves, half, and then the same negative?
I can offer that as a bonus to Nick.
Minus a third, and 2/3?
No, it's minus 2, minus 1, 0, 1, and 2. The azimuthal quantum number of L runs from 0 to N minus 1, and the magnetic quantum number runs from minus L to plus L. I would do a quantum mechanics joke at this point, but the trouble is, by their very nature, they tend to be both funny and unfunny at the same time. Next question. In linear algebra, what does the operation of a covariant tensor of rank 1, i.e. a covector, produce when it operates on a vector? That's one of those rare sentences where I actually don't understand more words than I understand. So,
I understand all the words, I just don't know the answer. That's what I'm working on. Does it give you 0?
I can offer that as a bonus as well.
Does it invert it in all planes?
The answer, in fact, is a scalar. Someone in the audience went, or a tensor of rank 0. That brings us over to Nick. The temperature of a fluid can be defined as being proportional to the average of what property of its constituent molecules?
Energy?
What type of energy?
Kinetic.
Kinetic energy is correct. And finally, if similarly charged particles repel each other, then can you give a brief explanation of why atomic nuclei, consisting of clumps of positively charged protons, albeit amongst uncharged neutrons, don't fly apart?
Because there is a thing called the weak nuclear force, which keeps them within the nucleus up to a certain radius, which is why you also have some unstable, very big nuclei. There's the strong nuclear force which holds them in. There's electromagnetism, which is weaker than the strong nuclear force. And all of these are much bigger than gravity.
The phrase I was looking for there was strong nuclear force. So you're quite right, yes. So we move on to our final round, which is a quick fire round. It's 1 point for a correct answer, lose a point for an interrupt if you get it wrong. As soon as they know the answer, the teams have to press their bell or buzzer. And here we go. What is the monetary unit of China? That is Nick.
The one.
Is correct, yes. The one is the equivalent of the pound. The renminbi is the equivalent of sterling, but either is correct. Next question. What do the dots on an ordinary dice add up to? David.
21.
21 is quite right, yes. What is the only country in the world beginning with the letter Y? That's Nick.
Yemen.
Yemen is quite right. Where on a journey might you see the following items? Fish plate, pandrel clip, chair, ballast, and sleeper. Yep, David.
A railway line.
On a railway line, yeah. Is quite correct. Of the principal rivers in the southwest United States, the Rio Grande flows into the Gulf of Mexico, but in which state is its source? That is Simon.
Colorado.
Colorado is quite correct. What is the name of the EU agreement on relaxing or removing border controls within some of its member states? That's David.
The Schengen.
The Schengen agreement is correct. An agreement named after the town in Luxembourg where it was signed, and not because a Dutch delegate to the EU said everyone has to be Schengen from the shame him sheet. I just wanted to do that pun, and I did it. Named after the physicist Michael Faraday, what is the SI unit of capacitance? That is Nick.
Farads.
The farad is quite correct. And finally, fingers on buzzers, what am I describing? A children's game in which four pachyderms attempt to ingest as many spheres as possible. That's Dan.
Hungry, hungry hippos?
Hungry, hungry hippos is right, yes. Which late charge by the students brought the scores a little closer together, but it is still a Dons victory. The students have a very creditable 22. The Dons are this week's winners with 30. Very good performance there from the Dons. Commiserations to the students who would have won an exclusive third degree York University limited edition handcrafted and historically accurate Kylie lip kit. That's all for this show. Thanks to both our teams, you at home and our audience here. That's it from the third degree. Goodbye.
That was the third degree coming this week from the University of York. The chairman was Steve Punt. It was devised and produced by David Tyler, and the programme was a positive production for BBC Radio 4.